In today's episode, we unpack 9 visitor follow-up hacks that will help your church grow. Healthy churches know that every visitor is a gift from the Lord, but many churches do not have a well-designed follow-up process that helps turn visitors into fully committed members. Nailing that process down is one of the most important things that leaders can do to help their churches thrive. We hope this conversation helps you reach people the right way. You're listening to the Reach Right podcast, the show dedicated to helping pastors and church leaders reach people the right way. Hosted by me, Thomas Costello, and with me as always is my co-host, Ian Hyatt. We're here to help your church see more visitors and grow. Well, hey guys, welcome to the Reach Right podcast, episode number 14. I am your host, Thomas Costello, and with me as always is my co-host,
Ian Hyatt. Hey, how's it going, Thomas?
Going good, Ian. Looking forward to our conversation today. We got a fun one. We're talking about the 9 church visitor follow-up hacks to help grow your church. I think this is something that's really important for churches to hone in on all the time, not just in the pandemic season. I know a lot of our content has been pandemic related, but this is some secret sauce, I think, for churches in all seasons, is getting this stuff right. So
I think people are just excited to hear something for all seasons, not just pandemic season.
So I know we are
the
done.
More normal we can get on these things, the better. So
yeah, that's exactly right. So I know for people will ask me sometimes about my ministry background and how things went in the last church that I pastored. I pastored a church in Madison, Wisconsin, and we saw pretty tremendous growth there. And they asked kind of what we felt like we did well to see that happen. And I was just telling someone the other day, I think we did a few things right on the marketing side. Obviously, the teaching was world class at the church that I was pastoring. But no.
When I came up there and preached? That church exploded after that.
It was monumental growth then. But if I felt like we did anything really right to help the church not just see lots of visitors, because I think we did a good job with that, but to see people stick, it was really honing in on our visitor follow-up process as a church. And in my experience, and you can probably testify this too, is that a lot of churches neglect this. Like this is something that I think we hear the most when we're talking to our clients. They'll tell us about just what some of their strategies and things, and then we'll ask them as we're going through maybe a website strategy call what their follow-up process looks like. And how many times do we hear like, you know, that's something we're still kind of ironing out.
It's
a work in progress with that stuff. And so I think we've just honed a really good list of some ways that churches can hack that to make it something more effective. And the goal of this is to take visitors. This doesn't make visitors, but I think it can take the visitors that you're getting and make them stickier. That's the goal behind these things, is it turns visitors that come, which are precious already, it turns them into people that are more likely to stick around at your church. Nelson Searcy, he played a big part in some of the things that I think about this now. I kind of followed some of his systems when I was younger in ministry. And he says it's important that we think of every visitor as if they were a gift from God themselves. The visitors don't just come to the door, and they truly are gifts. And how we steward them in these kinds of processes and systems and how we do follow-up, I think it really is vital. So good conversation, I think, for us to have. So let me kick us off. The first one, and I arguably the most important, and I think some churches miss this, but you have to incentivize visitor information. You have to incentivize, give people a reason to give you their information so you can start off this visitor follow-up process. And churches have known this forever. Ever since I've been a part of a church, when I was a kid, we always would ask visitors to fill out some kind of a form. Back in the day, you remember how we used to... Churches were much more open to embarrassing visitors back in the day, right? Do you remember that?
Like, so I remember. I've been part of that embarrassment. You just reminded me. I one time was visiting, and we were in between churches in a season praying for our next church and visiting churches. And I remember, and it was actually a fairly large church. When I say large, it was not small. It was probably about 300, 350 people. And at the very end of it, the pastor just called me up to the very front and gave me a hug in front of the whole congregation. It was a bit awkward.
Oh, my goodness.
Awkward.
On your first Sunday, you're saying?
First visit. Yeah. First Sunday visit. And, you know, in front of 350 people gives me a hug. I'm like, thank you, but I don't know you yet.
So. Yeah. I'll remember the first time you and I went to a church together when we were visiting a church, and we got called out in a prophetic word, not us directly, but the quality of our wives, I remember, is what they said, who weren't with us at the time, but
they weren't.
A prophetic word about the quality of wife we each had. So
that's right.
Humorous. And then he also, I think, prophesied a keyboard anointing on me, I think is what he said.
So, yeah, the keyboard. He meant podcast. It just got messed up a little bit.
Yeah, so. Probably did. So anyway, a bit of a diversion, but we used to really make visitors stick out like a sore thumb, and we want to advise against that now.
Right.
But you still need to find a way to capture people's information. So the days of having all your visitors stand up here in Hawaii, what a lot of churches used to do is they would give visitors lays so that they would, you know, it was kind of a symbol of honor. And I get what they're doing behind that. It is beautiful to receive a lay, but then you're there for the first time, and you're wearing this giant floral thing around your neck. And so you stick out to everybody, and everybody knows you're there for the first time. And I think most visitors don't want that. Mm-hmm. And honestly, most visitors don't want to give away their information, if we're being really honest about this. I am very protective of that. Personally, I know when I'm surfing the web or if I go anywhere, I don't like filling out things every time I go to a new grocery store, having to give all my information to get onto their secret club. And people are more cautious with their information than ever before right now. So if you think that you can just ask people to give you their email address and phone number and home address, and they'll just do it out of this obligation of being a first-time visitor, I think you're going to get very few responses to that. You really need to give it some kind of incentive. So, well, I don't know, what does your church do, or what have you heard as far as incentives that churches offer to get information?
Yeah, absolutely. And I totally agree with you. I think that your first point of just that people are sensitive and giving their information out even more so these days. But, you know, so I think that, you know, we have to be strategic with this, right? So incentives, you know, I know my church, one of the things that we've done for a long time and it works well for us is that, and being in the Texas heat where it's hot here for even more than just the summer months, we give out a nice little, not a Yeti or anything that expensive, but basically like a water with a carabiner thing. So it's kind of like a water cooler thing. And you know, we make it clear to them too, you know, and this is like when we're in person and they're visiting and we're doing our announcements and asking them to fill out their like guest greeting card, we make it clear to them too that, hey, listen, we're not going to hound you or show up at your door, you know, or anything like that. We just want to know how we can continue to pray and help you get plugged in. And then we have them go to the guest center to receive that gift. Now, as we're in this season of also people watching online, some of the neat things that we've seen, some churches that we work with do, Thomas, and is send, you know, someone like, I know one church did a neat thing where they sent anyone who visited online and filled out like a response form, they sent them like a branded box with like a church t-shirt and like a coffee mug, and it had like a pen. And, you know, obviously certain churches are going to put a little more into it than others, and you don't always have to go that far with it.
Sure.
But those are some things we've seen. I've seen my church do, and other churches do something similar to, and churches that are, when they're doing it with online visitors as well.
Yeah. All kinds of swag. Swag is always great because it has that kind of recurring top of mind thing that goes on. We did video gift cards to local coffee shops and said, hey, you know, hey, this is a gift card for you, but in the future, we'd love to get some coffee. And, you know, we kind of introduce things that way. And I think that was work. I saw another church, what they did was they offered visitors they would give a $10 donation to another charity that did work in the community in the name of their visitor, just right back to us and let us know what charity that is. So I can't verify whether that worked well or not. I don't know if that's something that is incentive enough, but the point here is that you have to give someone a reason to do that. And that's really what allows you to kick off your follow-up process. So I think incentivizing it is important.
Yeah. And that's a good segue, I think, into the second point we have here that I'll introduce is to when you have this process in place, let's formalize your process with it. So make your process with this follow-up consistent. And there's several reasons why that's going to be beneficial. So you should probably sit down as a team and think about what the best process is so that you're not just trying something different from week to week, because then it's going to get confusing for visitors and your volunteers and staff alike. So when you formalize something and you have something consistent, it's also going to help you measure it, I think, better ongoing, because you're going to have one thing that you're doing. Everyone can get behind it and it's clear to staff, volunteers, because let's face it, obviously, churches are mostly relying a lot of churches on volunteers. They don't, you know, unless you're a large mega sized church, you don't have just staff for all of this stuff.
Yeah, of course.
So if you're always changing it up and volunteers are often in and out, you know, as far as their consistency, well, then you're not going to have anything set in place for moving forward. That's clear.
I think formalizing it does a couple of things. It helps you to get the same level of follow-up to everybody. And I kind of get the idea that, and I understand why people think this, that I want to let the Holy Spirit be involved in this process. And I want to prayerfully consider everybody that comes. But I've just found that, yes, certainly do that. But I think we serve a God that's a God of order. I think having having a process that is formalized and written down and saying, this is what we do for everybody. It's good because it keeps you consistent and it really lets you scale. And we found this to be the case when I took the church that I was pastoring in Wisconsin. We saw, you know, one visitor family a month, maybe. And over time, we grew to seeing 8, 10, 15 visitors a weekend sometimes. Yeah. And so we saw a lot of people that we had to put through this process. And if I could handle one family a month, just kind of prayerfully considering how to follow up with each person, or our team could do that. But by the end, when we had other people involved, like you were saying before, and we were getting 10 or 15 people every single week filling out these cards, without something specific to fall back onto to know exactly what we do each step of the way, it would have been impossible to give everybody the kind of care and the kind of follow-up that we would want to, especially remembering that these are gifts from the Lord when we think of visitors that way.
That's
so
right.
I think formalizing is really important that way. So
And let me pray, said, and one last thing with that. If the Holy Spirit does tell you to give someone a different gift or something, then you should do it. But again, he's a God of order.
Absolutely. No, and that's not, we want to keep space for that. And that's great. Yeah. And I think, certainly
you should be praying for
visitors.
Include
prayer in your process. Formalize that I'm going to spend time praying for each one of these visitors that came in the door, that we'd be able to help them on their path and get closer to Jesus. And so, you can absolutely include that and formalize it. So number three, let me hit that, is I think it's so important now that every church in their visitor follow-up process, that they build an email sequence. And let me give some background for those that maybe don't know or don't use this. An email sequence is something that you can use that automatically sends emails at specific intervals after somebody has, in this case, showed up to a service for the first time, or they let you know they were there at an online service, but that you would have a sequence of emails that would go out over a period of time to kind of hone and build that relationship and start to get them more and more familiar with the church and helping them take that next step and getting plugged in. So for most churches, it'll probably look something like an email on Monday that would go out from the pastor that would be pre-written, that you could have this ready to go. And then another one that maybe goes out the middle of that week, talking about how I'm excited to see you this Sunday again. Here's the sermon topic we're going to be speaking about. Hey, I'd love to catch you and shake your hand and meet you for the first time this Sunday. So let's make a point of doing that. And then maybe after that second Sunday, and then after a third Sunday, and then maybe a fifth email. So it would keep going, but there'd be a system of emails that go out all on their own. And it just kind of nurtures these people and helps them to take that next step that you want them to take in their discipleship process. I think that's really something that's important for churches. What do you think?
I agree. And I think for maybe one of the pastors or ministry leaders listening to this, you know, could be in the back of their mind, oh, is that, you know, hounding them too much or, you know, putting too much pressure on them. I do think we should be careful, you know, in the verbiage of the emails and, you know, obviously all of that. But I think the way to think of it is it shows these people that you care about seeing them again. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, and if they don't want you emailing them, they'll let you know. But I think if you're strategic and you're just genuine in your emails about, you know, in the messaging of your emails and everything, that it won't come off that way. So I think it just shows that you care. The more, I think that we've seen, not just with email marketing or anything else, marketing is probably not the right word to use what we're talking about as far as reaching visitors, but it's in there a little bit. But
yeah,
but I think that the more we see that you reach out to someone, it's more effective than not doing it. So
yeah, no, anybody that's running an organization nowadays, especially one that's trying to go more and more digital, which I think all churches should be doing, you're going to email people that don't want to hear from you at some point. That just happens. Yeah. I mean, we have a list of several thousand churches that we write to every single week. And we hear from one or two of them a week that say, I don't want to hear from you anymore. And that's just part of the part of business. Every organization is that way. The larger your church is and the bigger your reach, the more you're going to hear those kinds of things. And you need to be okay with that. You'd certainly, I know when it's a small church, I remember this feeling when we had, 75 or 80 people going to our church for a season, that when we got an unsubscribe, it was like someone had a conversation with me about their family leaving the church almost. When someone clicked unsubscribe, it pierced my heart. It broke me. Oh, and I was like, why don't they want to hear this profound blog that I just wrote? Why don't they want to hear more about that stuff? So, you know, you have to get over those kinds of things and just know that's part of what a digital organization is going to do nowadays. So yeah, that's good.
Well, that leads us to a next good point here is number four, using text messages. It's not just email. Mm-hmm. Also, you should consider text. And I think that pastors are catching onto this more. I know now with what we do here at Reach Right, I text within the last, I'd say year and a half to 2 years, I text more pastors than ever before in follow-up communication that I have. People are getting more used to it, but there might still be, I think, some pastors a little apprehensive. But what they need to know is most people these days text. And it, particularly the millennials and down, you know, they prefer to get a text than a phone call. A lot of them don't even, you know, I hear on voicemail greetings that, hey, for a faster response, you should text me.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people are not listening to voicemails anymore, know, or a lot of people, you know, would prefer a text over an email. So, you know, it's something that is, I think, new for a lot of churches, but churches should definitely do it. I think it's also comes off a little bit less aggressive because you didn't just call them, kind of like showing up. So no one likes door-to-door salesmen, right? So it's kind of like that. I think if they get a text to them, it's kind of a little less pressuring and they then have the opportunity to maybe respond and you can take the conversation further over the phone or in person.
Yep. No, that's exactly right. So I'm right on the millennial Gen X line is where I know you're well established in the Gen X side.
Oh,
I
know that you're 1 year than over you. So yes.
Heartily in the Gen X as a Gen X or a Xennial, as they say, sometimes kind of right in the line. I was in high school or I guess college when text messaging started to become a thing. And so it was something that I feel like I'm a little bit more comfortable on a text message, but I'm not someone that gets nervous getting on the phone or anything like that. I know a lot of people younger than me, that would be the case, is that they just don't have that same kind of phone experience. You know, when you and I were in high school, that's what you did, is you talked on the phone to people.
Or you had a pager.
Yeah, I had one of those too. Yeah, absolutely. So, I think that using text messages, especially because they are pithy, you can keep it very short and sweet. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great way to do at least an initial follow-up. Even I've seen some churches do this on Sunday afternoon. If they received some kind of a phone number from the person who came, that they would just send a message that would be from the pastor. A lot of times that's really great from the pastor. If you're a small enough church, that works well. And just, hey, thanks so much for coming. If we can do anything for you at all, please let us know. It's not there's not demanding a response. It's not, hey, what did you think of our service? You know, it's not any of that kind of stuff. It's just something that's really an easy barrier to entry for people and starting a conversation. So use it. Now, this one will be more controversial and I'm going to just put it out here. I think making a phone call still has a place. And here's something that I think is that I've learned running churches, running Christian organizations, is that sometimes just because it's what somebody wants, it doesn't always mean that's what we should do as an organization. You know, because people that come into a church a lot of times, they're not coming into a church like thinking they need to give their life over to Jesus. My job as a pastor is to convince them of that while they're there and help them to make a decision to give their life over to him. They didn't come in looking for that, but I know that's what they need. That's what's the message that I want to give them. And not quite in the same way. I don't want to give it the same level as this, but there are people that would not want to hear from you on the phone, but there is still value, I think, to churches and pastors specifically making a phone call to people that come and visit. So at our church, I asked our team to make one phone call to everybody that ever visited. And usually, because most people don't answer calls from people they don't know nowadays, it will just go to voicemail. So you won't ever have to talk to someone. Usually, if you're talking to someone, it's because they're probably a Gen Xer or boomer and they're more comfortable on the phone, and that's okay. And so, but if it's someone younger that's not comfortable on the phone, they're not going to answer anyway. But there is value in just leaving a voicemail because you can get things like tone across and just letting them know that you care about them. Now, it's not saying that, hey, I want you to call me back. Make sure you call me back at your earliest convenience. You're not trying to do a high pressure sales call or something, but just getting a phone call out there. It's one more way that you give someone a touch. And so I always asked my staff to make one phone call to people. What do you think of that?
I think that's good. And I like what you're saying is, you know, it don't make it salesy. I guess the Christian version of making it salesy would be like a very hard evangelistic message, like, please call me as soon as you can because tomorrow's never promised and your salvation is on my mind. So I wouldn't recommend something like that at all, for sure. But you're exactly right. It's the effort. And I think even if it goes to voicemail, which it more than likely will, they can still hear your tone and the warmth and sincerity, which is hopefully what you communicate on a message or over the phone. And I think it means a lot. It shows an effort. And I totally agree.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's good.
Good. Well, that leads us, I guess, to our next point, which is a little bit kind of on the front end of all of this, before you would make a follow-up call, is to actually follow up before they show up. I think now this is a big deal. This was actually even a big deal before the pandemic, but now even in the midst of the coronavirus and everything, people are used to RSVPing for things more than ever now, and getting online and registering for something before they do it and showing up. So we've even seen plan your visit pages on your church website to be effective before the whole coronavirus and the shutdown. But I think they're even more critical now, having response forms or just something to where people, if they leave their information, or not everyone will do it. I know we've seen with the amount of churches we've worked with that we see that analytics and the data that not everyone, you know, fills out these forms, but the people that do and they were comfortable doing so, you should definitely preemptively reach out, you know, before they show up on Sunday. And nothing crazy and aggressive, just like we were saying with the phone call. Just, hey, we saw that you filled out the form. We're excited to see you on Sunday and your family and get to know you guys. Hey, let us know if there's anything we can be praying for ahead of time. Something like that. But I think that makes them stickier, don't you, as far as if you got that kind of a, and you've seen this as a pastor, right?
Yep. No, we've used it. And I found our visitors that pre-registered, they were much stickier. Let me take a step back and just talk about the opportunities for churches to do that. So what we're talking about here is on your church's website, having a few different ways that people can give you their information before they ever show up. The two primary ones that I've seen have been a let us know you're coming form. And so usually this is you fill out this form and we make some kind of a promise to you of what we'll do for you when you show up. People know they don't have to fill out a form to show up at church usually. I know some churches you have to do that now with coronavirus, but usually they know that you can just walk into any church. So you have to incentivize this and say, you know, what we did is we said, hey, we will have a gift for you when you get here. We'll get you a seat right in the middle so you don't stick out. We'll show you around and introduce you to a few people that you may want to meet. So helping people just get over the apprehension of visiting a church for the first time, they would fill out that form. The other way that we put that on sites is that a pre-register your kids form. This is a really big one where you know, nowadays with all the child security measures, it's tough to get someone through in 5 minutes, all the paperwork right. they have to do, especially if they have multiple kids signing into yeah. kids ministry for the first time. You need to know all the things about health issues and allergies yeah. and parental guardians and who can pick them up and who can't. And there's so many different things, and we're for all that stuff.
Yeah.
But what we've seen churches do is put that on their site, on their kids page, on their plan your visit page, where you can fill out your kids' information ahead of time and skip that whole line and just get a yeah. name tag printed out and get right into kids ministry and right into service. So yeah. anytime you get one of those forms filled out, you are wasting an opportunity if you're not reaching out to those people ahead of time right. and saying, introducing yourself as a leader of the church. You would probably want to tell them a little bit more about what to expect on Sunday and help yeah. them to make that decision, kind of getting down the path yeah. there. So,
yeah, that's it. And again, yeah. all this reduces apprehension, like you said, and people have even more apprehension to visit a church these days. So I yes. think that the more you could reduce, the more likely you're going to see them stick and come on Sunday. So,
yep, absolutely right. Yeah, that's good. Number seven, I'll tackle that one here. It is have one clear on-ramp. Have one clear on-ramp. And by on-ramp, we mean have one next step that someone needs to do in order to get into the whole life of the church there. So a lot of churches make this mistake of they think that by presenting a volume and lots of different opportunities, that is the best way for someone to get connected into your church, is that if you throw out 12 different things that they can do next, then they'll probably choose the one that's the best fit for them. But yeah. what happens typically is that gets lost in the noise, right? Mm. You think about how you do a good sermon or a good message, is you're not giving people 12 different assignments of different ways they can think about this right. passage of scripture. Here's 12 different ways that you can apply this and do all 12 this week. No, right. you're helping them come to one central point. You have maybe sub points that go with that, but there is one main theme in every yeah. good sermon that you drive everything towards. And if you get anything out of this conversation here today, churches have one specific on-ramp that you push people towards. And what that is, you can change that from church to church. For most churches, it's probably some kind of a meet the leaders type of a lunch or a gathering. Usually these happen after services. For some churches, it's going to be a full membership class. Yeah. For some churches that don't have a formal membership process, it might be some kind of a getting into a small group. I'm not so concerned over what that one on-ramp is. I have some thoughts on what works best, but I think just having one next step mm-hmm. that you push everything towards is really going to be important. Yeah. So, you know, so for us, it was having a what we called our starting point lunch at the church that I pastored last. And so mm-hmm. people would stick around for an hour and a half after church once a month. And if it was your first time, you could come on in and you'd get a free lunch out of it. And we really tried to encourage everybody that ever came. We told them when the next starting point was. Hey, can you come to starting point? And some of those yeah. different emails, they all kind of move people down that road there. So buckshot doesn't work. It's not something right. where you just shoot out a bunch of bullets and see what goes. Have that laser rifle focus and yep. just do that one thing, encouraging them in that one direction. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. And that's, again, it's going to keep everything, like we said, the second point, formalizing your process. It's kind of in the same vein there. It keeps it consistent for sure. But you can find that one unique thing right for your church. You know, one of the churches that we work with, I know they do a pizza. Their first on-ramp was pizza with pastor. You know, they'd have however many new visitors meet pastor in a certain area of the church. They'd do pizza for them. And, you know, hey, find your thing, but make it, you know, one clear thing. So
that's good. Let me add this. So at that's where you introduce the other opportunities, right? So when you have your pizza with pastor, that's where you help them get connected to a small group. And that's where you help them find a place to serve within the church. And you do all those things there, but move people down that road and have that, like, kind of that, as Dave Ramsey would say, that gazelle intensity towards that one thing that you want people to do as that next right step. So that's good.
And then you don't overwhelm them as well. So you know, with all of this that we're talking about, this leads us to our next item. Number eight is, with all of this, make it personal. You know, we've talked about this with the text messages. We talked about just, you know, we don't want to come off as a Christian robots, if you will. Right. So and the email follow up, phone, text, whatever we do with all of this, make it very personal, you know, to the visitor. So be authentic. People appreciate authenticity. Been plenty of studies that show that millennials, what they value greatly, and the next gen past them and past them, is basically authenticity, sincerity, and a lot of that's being personal. You know, if we're just putting some templated email out there. Now it's not to say you can come up with one consistent email and use those as a template, yep, if you will, or messaging, but make it very personal and authentic.
Yeah. Yeah. So when we say this, I think what we're getting at is, I'm not saying, you know, you have to build an email sequence like we said before, but make sure that that is something that comes across, not like this is the same thing that everybody gets, like it's a form letter. You need to write it in a way that pulls in people's first names. All modern email programs, whether you use MailChimp or Constant Contact or Zoho, like we use here, they all have ways that you can pull in people's first names. So I don't recommend that you shouldn't ever leave it generic. So it shouldn't say, dear visitor, you know, or something like that. You want to make sure that you're using people's first names. You're talking casually. If your church is small enough where, you know, maybe you're under a couple of hundred people, you see a few or a handful of visitors every week, and maybe you're the kind of pastor that meets everybody, you stand at the door and shake hands and do those things, I would try to find a way to personalize every message that I can. So you can have your form email, but I would always try to stick in some kind of personal experience that I had with them. It was great to meet you and your family and your three great kids. That way they know that I'm talking about you specifically. I don't send this out to everybody. So any way we can make that personal connection with people, I think it really helps people kind of get over that hurdle of whether they can relate to you as a pastor. And we know from studies that the primary reason why people choose a church is because of a relationship they feel with the lead pastor or the main speaker at the church there. Yeah. So anything you can do to make yourself approachable and personable, it goes a long way. And I think that at a minimum, if you're too large for that or you don't have the time for that, I think doing things to make your regular communication seem, I would rather be casual as opposed to formal, right?
Right.
So use first names. Don't use last, like Mr. or Mrs. So-and-so. You know, where appropriate, use first names where you can, and just try to be conversational with people.
Yeah, that's it. And I think this is where the smaller church might have an advantage. So I think if you're smaller, and of course, every smaller church is trying to grow, you know, this is where you can dig in a little bit deeper. But, you know, for any size church, you can still do this. But you brought up a good point there. You should make it as personal and remember things about them. All of that shows sincerity and that you care.
Yeah. So let me get to the last one now. Number nine, what that is it's verify the process. And I want to talk to you, I guess, as a organization leader. I've led a few different organizations, churches and businesses. And one of the things I want to say is that it's important that you verify that the process that you formalized is actually taking place. Because here's how a conversation goes pretty often that we have. So we'll talk to a church in some initial consultations about a web project or something like that. And we'll ask them, hey, what is your visitor follow-up process? Can you outline that for us? And then I usually have to ask a follow-up question where I say, now, is that what really happens? Or is that what the book says should happen? Is this really happening? And I think, I don't know what it is. This has been the same for organizations I've led that are outside of churches and secular organizations, that when it comes to communication, if you're not verifying that the process that you've outlined is happening, it will slip. Like people will stop doing it. And it's not like a slight on anybody. This is just a natural human thing, is that almost everybody, except for these really extreme extroverts, almost everybody gets a little bit uncomfortable when they have to reach out and talk to people that they don't know. I know this as someone who fibbed my way through a follow-up process in my early days in ministry, right? So I would I was assigned. I was that guy. I went out, got out of Bible college. I was working at a medium-sized church, and you know, the lowest job on the totem pole was being the follow-up guy that called everybody. This is back in the early 2000s, so you still had to call at that point. I had to pick up the phone and have these awkward conversations with everybody that walked in our doors for the first time. And I don't know that I ever lied about it and said I did that when I didn't, but I certainly tried to avoid making those phone calls. So I would look for like, if the number was hard to read, I might like, oh, I don't really know if that's the right number or not, so I'm not going to call it. Or I don't know all the things that I did, but I just know normally most leaders in churches, they don't like doing this, right? So making those phone calls, anytime you're, you know, it's equivalent to cold calling. Every business, you always have to push your salespeople to do cold calls because nobody in their right mind likes to call people that aren't expecting their call and maybe don't want to talk to them. It's just uncomfortable. So if you believe in this and you have a process that's formalized, I have just learned from experience in leading organizations and being on the other side that you need to verify that the process is happening all the time and that you have people committed to doing it. So I don't know. What do you think? Am I wrong on that? Or what do you think?
I couldn't agree more. So I think that that's and it's a good last point to finish on, because I think that just to solidify it is going to be key. It goes with everything we've been saying so far as the consistency, getting your staff and volunteers behind it. And I think that we've seen the churches that grow, and I know the churches we've consulted with that are successful churches and growing churches, they're the ones that do have their process verified and in sync. And so I think it's something that you know, even in the midst of because we know church, it's busy, right? You're focused on Sunday, you know, you're focused on, you know, kids ministry, the preaching, all of that. So this is kind of where things can slip, but it's a good thing to prioritize for that you'll be thankful for later. So,
yeah, no, I think that's right. So, well, that's it, guys. That's our secret sauce. I think this is something that if your church isn't doing a formal visitor follow-up process, I really, I highly encourage you to jump into something like that. Make it a formalized process. Build a team around this. If you're a church that's a few hundred or larger, you'll probably need a handful of people to help you with this. I'd say build a team no matter what, because we're all about getting more people involved in the ministry. But having people there to help you with this, maybe recruit a champion to go down this road with your church. But I think that this is what will take your church from having those gifts of visitors into a church that's actually turning it into regular growth in your attendance. And not just that, that's becoming a less and less important metric in the number of people that you're actually discipling and turning into Christ followers. They need people, they need guides to help them down that road, and having a process that you guide people through, it is one of the most important things you can do. So any final thoughts?
No, that's it. I think you wrapped it up superbly there.
Cool. Awesome. Well, that's it for us this week, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. If you haven't already, it would mean the world to us if you would rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, or if you watch online on YouTube or Facebook. We'd love to hear what you think. Let us know in the comments. And if we don't hear from you first, we'll catch you next week.
Have a good one, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Reach Right podcast. We hope this episode will help you reach people the right way. Looking for more resources for your church? Check us out online at reachrightstudios.com. If this episode has been helpful to you, it would mean the world to us if you would rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week. Ready to get full.